from Sean, alcoholic. All the way from Tulare. Congratulations to everyone who got chips. That's a big deal. I got a lot of those silver chips, but I remember looking at the 1, 2, and 3, and especially that 6-month chip, that blue one, and I just couldn't understand how people got them. I would just be amazed at people getting 6 months, you know, 1, 2, 3 months. It blew me away. I didn't know how they do it. Today I kind of do. When Bill asked me to do this, I chaired another meeting in Visalia, and when he first asked me, I said yes with a smile on my face, and, you know, because I was taught to always say yes to service work, but deep down I was like, oh, crap, I do not want to do that. But I was taught, like I said early on, that I should say yes when it comes to service because it's not about me. I'm trying to help the other person who's sick and suffering in these rooms. Let me look at the clock real quick, make sure I'm on time. And usually if I'm a little nervous right now, and that's probably because I'm thinking about myself, it's not a good thing. And that's something I try daily not to do and get out of myself. I try praying, meditating, talking to others, trying to help others. I was kind of talking to my sponsor the other day, actually. It's kind of a funny story. Whenever I was really young, probably, I don't even know, 8, 10, I used to watch, you know, movies, TVs, and you'd see like old westerns, and they'd be taking shots of whiskey, and they'd have whiskey on the rocks, and it would just look so good, and it looked fun. And I remember at that young of age going and getting like ginger ale and pouring it in a shot glass and taking a shot and sipping on a, you know, ginger ale on the rocks and just sipping it slowly, you know, looking cool. And then, you know, I remember, you know, like a lot of us, taking a swig of my dad's beer. I remember he would have a Coors Light and he'd get a tall can on the way home from work, and he lived out in the country, and he'd, you know, hand me the tall can over, and I'd know not to take a drink when the car was coming. I'd take a swig, hand it back, and I remember loving the taste of it, just loving the taste of Coors Light. And none of my family was alcoholics, but they were social drinkers, a lot of them. My parents were divorced at an early age. Some of my other family, they may be alcoholics. So it's not my decision to make, though. We'd have family get-togethers and whatnot, and there'd always be alcohol involved no matter what we did. And it was fun. First, you know, it'd be sneaking, you know, a couple beers with my cousins out of the ice chest, drinking, and we'd have fun, and then there would usually sometimes be a fight. And we used to, like, look forward to that stuff, you know. We'd get all excited, like, who's going to fight this time, you know, while we're sitting in the corner sneaking beers and just loving it, you know. See hair flying, hair pulling, and laugh about it the next day, you know, and enjoy it. We'd look forward to it. And I had a lot of good times early on, a lot of fun times. I remember my first hangover. You know, this is my experience. You know, I don't want to tell too much war stories, but, you know, when I'm listening to people, I have to relate. And hopefully you'll be able to relate, too. And if I don't help anyone in the room, which is the game plan, is to help one of you guys, you know, I know I'll be helping myself because I'm working a program today, and I know I'm going to go home sober tonight after doing this. And so anyway, that first hangover, I remember being at a buddy's house, at a buddy whose parents would buy us booze, and we'd drink, and it was all okay over there. It was acceptable. And I think I had like 6 Coronas and had a blast and laughed and had a good old time. And then I remember waking up the next morning with like the worst hangover I've ever had. Throwing up all day, I had to go home. And I remember puking in the toilet. It's like a summer day. My mom was swimming. Everyone was swimming. And I remember throwing up in the toilet and being really quiet about it. And looking back on it now, that was when I first learned how to lie about my drinking and keep it a secret. And I just remember being in there yakking in the toilet, trying to not be super loud and whatnot. And so I guess that's, you know, how it kind of started. My drinking, you know, career, I kept it a secret for a very long time. No one really knew the extent of how sick I became. And high school rolls around, And things were fun for a while. Started smoking a lot of weed. I remember just laughing. You had watched. I remember that's when Harold and Kumar came out. We were smoking a bunch of weed with my buddy at his place, the same place I would be drinking. I remember laughing for hours. You know, just it was great. But as by junior year stuff, some other things came along, little outside issues, and it became not so much fun anymore. What it was fun, I had a lot of good times, but that darkness started creeping in. And I had, you know, a little part-time job. I was in school. The only reason I graduated because my mom was a truancy officer, so she was always on my ass. You know, she knew she was always driving around town, and there was no way getting around it. And that's really the only reason I passed high school, is because I was actually in there and I did the work and I showed up. By the grace of God, I graduated. I don't know how. I totaled a truck in high school, dodged a bullet there. I think my mom knew one of the cops. They did all the sobriety tests on me, and I passed them because I had some of that other the white stuff, so it kind of sobered me up at that time. And I passed all the sobriety tests, but they knew I was drinking, you know. They knew I was messing up, and somehow I dodged a bullet there. That's kind of my story. I dodged a lot of bullets. I've only been in jail once. And I always drink and drove. I always did it. My mom had three of her best friends die in a drinking and driving accident whenever she was in high school. So that was her biggest fear, was for me to die drinking and driving. So she always told me, just you go party, I'll pick you up. Just don't drink and drive. And I did that a few times. But a lot of times I'd just say I'm staying over at my buddy's house and I wouldn't come home and I'd be driving all over the place. Many of times. Did a lot of stupid things. Driving down Indio and Tulare, yelling at people, just not in the right part of town. Doing stupid things. If you guys know where Indio's at, you know what I'm talking about. Looking for other substances. It's a miracle I didn't kill myself or someone else. That was definitely a God thing, I don't think. I think God had a plan for me, and it wasn't to go down that, it wasn't to do that route, I guess. Like I said, I pretty much at that time in high school, I would party, and I was able to somewhat turn it off at that time. I can kind of, you know, go to class and just smoke weed and maybe drink once a week or just on the weekends. But I was smoking weed every day. I was a total pothead at that time. I'd maybe go fill up a liter of soda and pour one of those $2 vodka bottles in there and show up to class and be drunk. I didn't do it as much, but I pretty much in the summertime, you know, I would party all night long, sleep all day. Wake up around evening time, maybe a little bit, and go out and do it again. Probably be gone all weekend. That continued for a long time. I just started getting burned out, mentally, physically, spiritually. I had a lot of friends at that time, and they would all, I would say, tell them, you know, I'm not going to drink tonight, you know, I'm not going to do the other stuff, I'm just going to drink like a gentleman, you know, like our book says. And they would all be like, ah, bullshit. You're going to be wasted and you're going to be doing who knows what else. And they did those other things too. And they drank and partied hard too. But you know, I always took it to the extreme. I was always the last one standing. I would always be up, you know, at 6 a.m, counting my cigarettes, making sure I had enough, digging through the ashtrays. Smoking the butts, trying to wake a buddy up to go drive me, you know, to get some more booze or whatever else. So that continued on for a while. I ended up going, it was 2013, July, I think. I went on a trip to Cabo with my parents. And it was all inclusive. They brought my brothers and sisters and all that stuff. And I pretty much destroyed the whole vacation. Today, my mom says that was the best vacation ever, but at the time, I pretty much ruined it. I remember it was an all-inclusive trip, you know, so I remember like it was like the first or second night we were there. I was down at the bar drinking tequila, and the bartender kind of like points out his nose like that. And of course, you know, I know what he's talking about. I'm here in Mexico. I was like, hell yeah. And, gave him my money, and he's like, go to the front lobby in the front about whatever time it was. And I was like, perfect, that's right before dinner time. And, so I finished off that day, you know, just obsessing on, you know what, and I remember being down there, in the front of the hotel, and it's all these cars, you know, and it's Mexico, you know, police driving with their AK-47s, machine guns, whatever, just driving around. I remember thinking to myself, like, what the hell am I doing? So whiteboard that way, there's like a million cars out there, like, who am I supposed to be looking for? And I remember my stepdad comes walking out, so they must have told him to come find me. And he's all, Keel, come on, you know, get in here. And I was like, all right, you know, this is a bad idea. And I luckily had enough sense to just go inside. So the next day, I see the same bartender or whatever, and I'm pretty hungover, and he had what I wanted, you know. And then I pretty much went on a rampage for the next few days, drinking a lot, drinking very heavily. Like I said, ruined the trip. The next night, my brother told my parents, you know, what I've been doing, because I shared a room with him. And they pretty much intervened on me and said, you know, you need to go get help. You need some treatment. And for the first time ever, I said yes. And I kind of had that little moment of clarity there. Because the whole time I always thought that other stuff was my problem. I'm going to drink like a gentleman and I'll be fine. For the first time I admitted, like, I'm an alcoholic and I can't drink either. I can't drink. I can't smoke a little weed. I can't do any of that stuff. And so I ended up going to treatment as soon as I got back the next day. But you know damn well I went and got as loaded as possible as I could that day before. Crying, boo-booing, bawling. I was a mess. I bawled the whole rest of the day in Cabo down at the pool in the little paradise. I don't know what I'm doing. So I ended up going to treatment, and it was the best decision I ever made. Treatment's not going to keep you sober, but for me at that time in my life, I just had to get out of this town. Like I said, geographic's not going to change. It don't matter. You know, you can get sober wherever you want. But at that time, that's just kind of what I needed. And I'd been kind of in and out of the rooms, you know, before, just picking up a couple of those silver chips, you know, and it was a 12-step rehab, just a solid rehab, you know. They're very deep into the 12 steps and meetings and all that stuff. And, you know, it forced me, you know, and I was there on my own will, but it forced me to, you know, get a sponsor and work your steps, and you get more privileges while you're there. And I was lucky, you know. I think it was another God thing that I was around some very good people and people who were working this program. And there was about 23 of us, and five of the people who I was in there with, we all got there about the same time, are still sober today. A couple of them, one of my good buddies who I talk to regularly, I stay connected with. I depend on him, and he depends on me for our recovery. Just got 5 years. I didn't stay sober that whole time, though. Like I said, I went back home, and I pretty much didn't do nothing. I started isolating again. I went to a few meetings, and pretty much would go to work, back to my apartment, isolating myself. And I made it exactly 28 days later, and that obsession came back. You know, it came back strong, and I was off and running again. And luckily that little bender only lasted two weeks, and you know, and I already had the tools. I knew what to do, and I immediately went to a meeting, talked to one of my good buddies, Rick S., and you know, and he said, if you know Rick, he would always say, I'd always call him every time I went back out after I got a few times. Anybody want to get any better this time? I'm like, no. I was like, you obviously already know that, Rick. And he just kind of shake his head or whatever. He's like, well, you know what to do. And I got a sponsor at that time. And we got into the book hard, and we were working the 12 steps, and life was getting good. Life was changing. After about a year of sobriety, I got married to my beautiful wife, Melissa, right over there. She's supportive, and she's there for me at all times. Raise your hand so they can see you. She told me not to embarrass her. But thank you. She's been there through a lot, and I've known her since kindergarten and all through school. We got married shortly after I had a year of sobriety at that time. I had a beautiful baby girl, Lily. She just turned 3 in May. And Melissa has a son, my stepson, who's 7. And things were going good. I was doing what I needed to be doing. Unfortunately, I had to go do a little testing of the waters and some research, I guess. After about 2.5 years, I think I was doing good, and I was working a program for maybe a year and a half. And then it slowly, you know, stopped going to meetings, stopped praying, stopped talking to people, just isolating, and I ended up going back out after 2.5 years. And, you know, like by this time, you know, I had a lot of responsibilities, a lot of, you know, I had a family. I remember my good buddy Tommy over there told me whenever she was born, he's all, your daughter's never, ever got to see you drink. And you know, that meant a lot to me. And I'm lucky she's at, without a young enough age, and it wasn't for too long that she won't remember. But if one thing that I've definitely learned during this time is that one of the most important things is that no human power, like our book says, will keep me sober. No one but God. I keep that with me. I learned a lot from that. Slip up, you don't have to relapse. You know, like I said, I was in and out of the rooms for a long time, but I don't really consider them relapse. I think a relapse or going back out is whenever you're doing what you need to be doing in this program. You know, that's a relapse. And I went out for a few months, and I ended up, after that 3 months, I went to one of the darkest spots I've ever been to in my life. I think it was because I had a family at this time. It wasn't just me messing around, hurting my family. You know, they're my parents and all that. You know, they're important too, but this was a lot more serious. And I remember that day before I got sober, I'm lying. But no one knew. You know, I was pretty good at keeping it hiding, but I knew they were about ready to catch on what I was doing. And I remember that day, like, kind of coming to, I just got hit with, a wave of reality. And pretty much any bad thought you could think was going through my head at that time. I thought I was going to die, thought I was going to leave my wife, my kids behind. Some other man's going to be tucking my kids in at night. It was hell. I was living hell. I was going nuts, literally nuts. I remember being at work just laying in the bathroom, shaking, sweating, detoxing off a lot. And it was miserable. And I remember going home at that time and on my lunch break and just freaking out, losing it. And I was going to go back to work, you know, I was going to just try to, you know, get sober, and they're not going to know, you know, no one's going to know. I only lost like 30 pounds almost, you know, and no one's going to know. I mean, get back on track, and then I'll tell them I just slipped a little bit later on, you know, I just did a little bit, but I'm good now. And no one's heard from me for a while in AA, you know, they knew what I was doing. And they checked on me for a while, but after a point, you know, he's off and running, you know, he's doing his thing. And I remember going back to work, and I driving down M Street in Tulare, and I swerved into Blaine Park, and I called my sponsor at the time, and I just told him everything. And it was just like that weight was like off my chest, you know, that lie, it was not a lie anymore. And it was a great feeling. I'm lucky I had those tools. I knew what to do. That was probably the hardest thing I ever had to do. One of the hardest things I ever had to do was call him. And he was just there for me, you know, and he was just like, yeah, you know what to do now, man. I was like, well, now I got to go tell my wife, got to tell my parents again, I got to go look at everyone in the face again and break their hearts one more time, you know. And he's like, well, I'll be there with you if you want to do that. And So I was like, all right, you know, come there with me, that'll help a little bit. But you know, it's like I went to work and I manned up that rest of the day and was able to get through. And went and got loaded one more time before I had to go tell everyone. It's just a train wreck. And and I remember just getting as low as I possibly could. And I was like, this is it. And I remember soon my wife came home, I just told her, got it out, called all my parents. I didn't wait for my sponsor to get there. I was like, it's done. I'm just getting it over with. And it was like that movie, Flight, if you've ever seen it. You know, when he gets up there and he's in court and he's about ready to get away with it. And he just tells the judge, you know, he couldn't tell one more lie. And that's how I felt at that time. I just got it out and was done with. Broke all their hearts again, though, you know. This is a selfish disease we have, you know, and it doesn't just affect us. It didn't just affect me. It affects everyone around you. My mom, you know, my wife mostly know me so sober, she, except for that little part, but my mom, I believe, was sicker than me at one time. And she still has, she calls her PTSD. She'll still bring that up to this day. And but she's a lot better now. And that's due to me getting sober. So once I told him, I was working with him for a while, and then I had to get a new sponsor, and I needed a new sponsor. I needed to do something different, and I saw this guy who I've seen at meetings for a long time, and I wanted what he had. You know, I wanted that. He had his sobriety. He had his stuff together. I knew he was working. I knew he was working the steps out of the big book, exactly how it was outlined. And, you know, he was a thumper. And I needed that. I didn't really want it, but I know I needed it. And I ended up getting the courage to ask him to be my sponsor. And he was like, all right. So, you know, because before, you know, looking back on it, you know, I half-assed a lot of it. And I didn't do it as thoroughly, the steps out of the book, as I knew this guy was going to have me do. So, you know, I started to meet with him once a week. That's what he wanted to do. And that scared the crap out of me for lots of... Commitments like that are hard for me. Very hard. But like I said, I knew I needed it. That's what I had to do. So we started working the steps, and I started going to more meetings. I became a secretary at a meeting. The first step, you know, in this book goes to about page 50, I think, something like that. And we spent a good 3 months on it, on step one alone. And for me, you know, that's what I needed too, because I really needed to admit to myself how powerless and how unmanageable my life is when I'm drinking. And, you know, because I've said it a million times, but until I get it this way and, you know, thoroughly, line by line of this book, I really, you know, admitted to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. One will just lead me to a million more. One little sip and that mind is gone. It's gone. I'm off to the races. And the unmanageability part, that was tough for me for a long time. I hear a lot of people talk about, you know, I was powerless, yeah, but my life and management, not so much. You know, I thought because I was able to keep a job barely towards them, barely, and that I had a place to stay and I would pay my bills, I'd pay my truck payment and rent on time, that I was all right. Let alone did I forget I had to go call the mom every once in a while and go tell her to pay my electricity bill, or, you know, I need some gas, I'm on E. You know, I'm driving around on empty through my whole drinking career, probably, you know. I had money to spend on other things. And life started getting better. Came to believe, you know, once I went to treatment, coming to believe in a power greater than myself, I started praying in treatment, so that step was easy for me, you know. I believe and I have faith, you know. Someone explained in treatment, you know, about having faith, this one guy, and he said, well, you got, you know, when you get on the airplane, you know, point. You don't know the pilot. You don't know anything, but you know you have faith that he's going to get you there, right? So why can't you have faith, you know, in a higher power? That made a lot of sense to me at the time. You know, why can't I? And once I started praying, you know, things, you know, got me out of myself, you know, and I mostly just pray for others, you know, unselfish things. I pray for the sick and suffering. I pray with my little girl, my family, before we eat, before we go on a trip. You know, I hear my little girl and stepson will pray at night after I read them a story or something, and my daughter says how thankful that she is for chocolate milk and stuff like that, you know, and, you know, I wasn't raised, you know, with God in my life, and I want her to have God because I know what God's done for me, and I just want my kids to have God in their life, you know. I know that it'll only benefit them, and they're going to grow up all right. And step number three, one of the most awesome steps I ever worked with my sponsor, the way he was doing it. After we finished some of the work, he goes and he tells me, so all right, I want you to stop praying for 4 days. And my first thought was like, what the hell did you just say? I was like, stop praying for 4 days. Everyone's been telling me, you know, pray for everything, you know, just stop. But you know, that thought, it only lasted for a few seconds. And, you know, and I honestly, it was my burning bush, you know, it was like I felt God's presence. And I knew that God was with me all the time. And, you know, I'm my biggest critic. And something I realized then is I'm really hard on myself at times, and I feel like I'm not doing enough for my recovery. And I could always do more. And I realized how much I did. I depended on God a lot. You know, and how much I was praying, and to be easy on myself, not so hard. You know, I'm doing the best I can. You know, I'm not going to work a perfect program. You know, no one does. But you know, I'm sober, and that was just amazing. I remember driving home, and it was a sunny day, and it was just beautiful. You know, and it was just, you know, it was amazing. That's all I could say. And see how much time I got. But it was an amazing experience. I continued, you know, did step number four. That was cool too. It was kind of painful. I did do a thorough step four before that, and but this time I got to see, you know, a lot of my things that I had in, you know, and the majority was just not being good enough. You know, being judged, just not feeling less than, that kind of stuff. And it really wasn't much. My sponsor just kind of shook his head, like, heard it all before. It's not that big a deal. You know, I worked the rest of the steps with him. And I've worked with another alcoholic before. And that's an amazing experience as well. Where I'm at today, I try not to get too comfortable. I've gotten too comfortable in these rooms before, and I know where it leads me. I try to stay in contact with other people in these rooms. I'm of service through the whole time I've been sober. I've at least been a secretary of a meeting. I show up, you know, and open those doors and hope to help someone else. Like I said, I just try not to get too comfortable. I reach out. I have a few. Our topic the other night in our men's meeting was unity, and I think everyone was kind of touching on the same thing. You know what unity meant to them, and it's one guy was sharing, and I totally believe that that's what it is too. It's like these people in these rooms, you know, are there for you at all times. You know, we're just a group of alcoholics trying to help each other, you know, and stay sober. And it's hard for me to make friends, you know, even in these rooms, you know. I'm not a very social person, and it's hard. But, you know, the friends I do have in here, I know, with the unity, you know, I can call at any time, and they would be there for me and do anything for me. And that's special, you know. Few people, you know, at the meeting before I left, you know, Tommy, Bob, all you guys said, I'll see you there. We're going to come support you, and, you know. Well, all you guys showed up. Bryce back there, you know, thanks for being here, brother. I told him to come, and he's here. That's amazing. You know, I have a lot of good friends, or some few good friends, you know, outside of these rooms, but, you know, they probably wouldn't want to come here. But I don't blame them. Life is good today. Let's see. How long have I been sharing for? Yeah, that's about it, I think. You know, I am willing to work with another alcoholic. If anyone wants to work these steps out of this big book, you can come talk to me out of the meeting, you know, because I need to stay sober. And I want you to stay sober as well. But that's what I need. I have to give this thing back. That's what I've been told since I've been in these rooms, that you have to give it to keep it. So if you guys want to get down to business and do some work, you know, let me know. If you just need someone to talk to, you need a number or whatever, call me. I secretary a meeting at the Hillman House in Tulare on Wednesday nights from 8 to 9. I've only been doing it like a year. 8 to 9. I get there at 7:30, get the coffee rolling, brewing. So if you guys are able to make it out there, we could definitely use the sport. It's kind of a smaller meeting, but I enjoy it. I enjoy smaller meetings. I enjoy bigger meetings. Thanks for listening to me, and God bless you guys.
Thank you, Sean. Let's give another round of applause for Sean.